This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
Welcome back. We've all been watching news coming out of Ethiopia and all the fighting that has been happening in Tigray. Now, Ethiopia's government under Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed is carrying out a military offensive in Tigray, Ethiopia's most northern state. A six-month state of emergency has been declared in the region. Now, Chessie Brown writes an article where she argues that Ethiopia's troubled history provides clues to why an all-out civil war is possible. She joins us now. On the line. Chessie, welcome to the show. Let's start with the history that you speak of that, you know, lays the foundation for the possibility of an all-out civil war.
Yes, absolutely. So to answer that question, we really have to look back almost 50 years to the civil war that started in 1974 when the TPLF, or the Tigray People's Liberation Front, as they're called more commonly, emerged as a small insurgent group in opposition to the Soviet-supported military regime that was ruling Ethiopia at the time. Mm-hmm. And they developed over the next decade into this highly organized, sophisticated political movement that we know today. And what's really important when we think about that civil war was the really impressive and quite unique level of democracy that the TPLF were able to provide during that civil war to their people. They involved women, for example, in the military and in community operations on equal footing to men. Mm-hmm. They included lots of mass associations and placed a very large emphasis on community-based decision-making. And they implemented widespread land and education reforms, which really rooted the movement in the needs of the people and has cemented this idea of the TPLF, of Tigrayans, as being a people who come together and stand up for what they see as their democratic right or autonomy. Mm. And as that civil war continued, what the TPLF did was they led a coalition of other liberation groups in Ethiopia, including probably most notably the Eritrean People's Liberation Front, who they had been quite long-standing enemies with, but they brought together to go to lead the way to victory over the oppressive regime in 1991. And what they did once they managed to overthrow that regime was they formed what's known as a multi-ethnic federation, which essentially means that they are a centralized state which has divulged power to regional groups. Mm-hmm. And in that constitution of 1991, they implemented what was known then as Article 39, which meant that every region had the right to self-determination and peaceful succession if they require. Now, that's really important to understand because that's the clause that the TPLF are drawing on at the moment as justification for their actions, because they're accusing Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed of violating that right to self-determination and right to dictate regional policy. And they're using that rhetoric from the civil war of Tigrayans as a movement for democracy, Tigrayans as a movement of the people, to try and draw the region together and stand firm in their opposition to the Prime Minister.
And what are some of the other similarities that we can draw from this legacy of civil war to what is actually happening at the moment?
Well, I think one that's quite very much very concerning is that we saw in the civil war an influx of refugees into Sudan. Mm-hmm. And what happened there in 1983, as I think is most people's most prominent memory of Ethiopia, was this horrendous famine that resulted in the loss of millions of lives. But what a lot of people, I think, overlook when they think about that famine was that drought was very common in Ethiopia, as it is common in lots of countries, including, you know, for example, the United States. But what turns a drought into a famine is politics. And that famine was so horrendous and resulted in the loss of life because of the war that was ongoing. And unfortunately, what we're now seeing is today the report suggests that up to 17,000 Tigrayans have now fled into Sudan, and they're in a refugee camp there. And the region has been cut off from aid. We're seeing reports of a shortage of water, a shortage of fuel. So there is a very real possibility that another enormous humanitarian crisis is looming in this civil war, just as in the last.
And you know, Abiy Ahmed Ali seeming, you know, a bit undeterred, you know, with him issuing that tweet earlier in the week saying that Ethiopia is grateful for friends expressing their concern and that the country's rule of law operation is aimed at guaranteeing peace and stability once and for all by bringing perpetrators of instability to justice. The irony in this tweet.
Yes, I think there is, because Ahmed has accused the TPLF of an attempt to divide and weaken the country. And in response, the TPLF have really held themselves up as the defenders of democracy, which does, I think, point to some irony within this tweet, as Ahmed is saying that his operation is a rule of law. But the problem with Ahmed's regime that has really riled the TPLF in the previous month is that his state has become smaller and smaller and smaller, and he has been seen to remove not only TPLF but other ethnic group leaders from critical positions, and has formed this very key part of his government. So a lot of the conflict started when Ahmed postponed the elections that were supposed to take place in August for nationwide elections, and that was on account of the pandemic. And he's come under quite strong criticism for that, but also lots of defence from countries who say, how can you hold elections during a pandemic? And you have to, you know, preserve the safety of your people first and foremost. But I think the real problem with that decision was that it was a decision made at that very high level of Ahmed's government and not taking into account the democratic processes that would have involved regional states. So Ahmed said he's imposing a rule of law, but he himself is not obeying the law that suggests that a decision to postpone elections has to be taken democratically with all the considerations of the various regional groups in the nation.
I want you to also talk to us about the dangers of a federation. You also say in this article that the ascent of Ahmed in 2018 brought grand hopes of reform. The reality, however, threatens once again to disappoint millions of Ethiopians who place their trust in their leaders.
So when this federation was set up in 1991, it was this really progressive, I think, indication to the world of what Ethiopia could do, because Ethiopia is a nation of very diverse people. They were one of only two countries on the continent that was never colonized, and that's something that's really important in their narrative. But what it means is that they don't, well, not all of them see themselves as pan-Ethiopian. They don't see themselves as Ethiopians, as one people. They are very aware that they are diverse peoples with very diverse cultures, languages, and traditions. And in 1991, when they formed this federation, that was a celebration, as much as anything, of those differences and recognizing that people with such diverse perspectives could come together and celebrate those. But as the state has become more and more centralized, it has actually fostered ethnic conflict rather than using it to diffuse the historic patterns of conflict that it had initially hoped to set out, because ethnicity became much more than differentiation along language and cultural lines, but actually a tool of competition used by alienated ethnic elites for power within the state.
With history seeming to repeat itself, what kind of a legacy is Ethiopia building now?
Yeah, I have to say that I really think that it is. And I think it's important to remember that unity within a nation is something that can only really be achieved when there's constant stability and peace. And Ethiopia has been on and off at war now for 50 years. When we think about the Ethiopian-Eritrean War, and that was in the early part of this century, and that has fallen most heavily on the shoulders of Tigray, where the border between Ethiopia and Eritrea lies. So when we think about history repeating itself, we have to think about this one quite small, there are only 6% of the Ethiopian population, Tigrayan people, having to use this narrative of civil war to come together and decide as a nation, as a region, whether or not they want to succeed from Ethiopia, which is currently being talked a lot about on social media, or whether they want to be a part of the narrative that overcomes what they are seeing as Ahmed's repressive regime. And that's not necessarily something that I think is completely accurate, but that is very much how they are seeing his actions to oppose the right of regional governments to dictate their own policy.
You also say that if Tigray wishes to consider its right to secede, this must be reviewed through the democratic processes in place for such an event in order to protect the stability of Ethiopia and the region and to prevent further descent into war.
Yes, and so there are a number of mass associations, as I mentioned, that were set up during the civil war that were very much based on debate. So they really encouraged debate within them of both men and women coming together to talk about very contentious political issues such as land reform, education policy, and those are still in power in Tigray. They're still in place. They're still very regularly used, and those are the processes that really need to be drawn on, because Tigrayans are as you know, unique as anyone, and they are themselves divided on this issue of whether or not succession is the right course of action for them. It is a very difficult course politically and economically, we know that, but if it is one that they themselves, as an ethnic group of people, feel that is the right decision, then it needs to be taken democratically. Mm. And that has to be taken to the centralised state under that constitution, Article 39, that allowed the group to do so, which is what we saw happen in Eritrea, although that itself led into a different story.
All right. Chessie Brown, thank you so much for giving us your time this evening. Chessie is a PhD research student at the University of Reading. We'll be back right after this.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.